Oh my, another episode of the SaftaCast with yours truly, Scott C. You know, someday somebody's going to make you want to turn around and say goodbye. That day is not today, because today I am saying hello, not goodbye. Hello, welcome to the SaftaCast. I'm your host, Scott C. You know, someday somebody's going to make you want to turn around. We're caught in a time loop. Folks, we have a good show for you today. Marcel Browers is on the program, and we had a great talk, but before I tell you about that, let me tell you about something else. It is time for the Sundress Academy News. Coming up for you, some events tomorrow, the 16th of July, at the Bearden branch of the Knoxville County Public Library. The Sundress Academy will be hosting their first Creative Writing Club for kids. This is open to young people ages 11 to 15, thereabouts. All young people like that are welcome to come to the library to talk about their favorite books, the books they love, the books they read, and maybe even read from their own work if they want. Sundress authors and editors will be on hand to talk about creative writing, to give kids their prompts, to help lead workshops. No prior creative writing experience is necessary to be a part of this, and the cost, for you parents out there, is free. That is right, it is free. You get nationally renowned authors and editors coming in and teaching your children about creative writing and about literature and about books and all this cool stuff and everything for free. And that is tomorrow at 2 p.m., beginning at 2 p.m., I should say, at the Bearden branch of the Knoxville County Public Library System. And then this weekend on the 20th, the award-winning Sundress Reading Series. I mean award-winning because they were awarded LitBridge's 2014 Regional Winner for the South for Reading Series. The Sundress Reading Series returns once again to the Knoxville area on the 3 o'clock at the Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee. Featured readers this time are Sandra Marchetti and Sarah Einstein. It is going to be a good one, folks, and I look forward to hearing more of these lovely people and their work in the near future, because they are on fire, these two, and there are many other writers who are on fire, including our guest today, the one and the only Marcel Browers, who is a Sundress author, yes. Of course, if you are interested in picking up a copy of his latest book, you can check it out from the Sundress Publications website. Just go on to sundresspublications.com, go to store, look up Marcel, and you'll find his book right there. I've read it. It's a good read. It's quite enjoyable, and it is worth the checking out. And so is Marcel in general. He is an awesome dude, and we got the great chance this recently to sit down and talk about some awesome things. We started off talking about the summer, about barbecue, about so many things, your childhood toys, just all over the place, and ending up talking about World Cup soccer. And it was truly a great time. Without further ado, let's get right into it with the one and the only, the awesome Marcel Browers, right after the theme song. Marcel.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself and your wife doing well as well?
She's doing well. She's not here yet, but she'll join us whenever she joins us.
That's understandable. Well, thank you guys for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this and join us.
Oh, yeah. No, it's our pleasure, and we look forward to it.
Oh, you guys! I know you guys have a very busy schedule, so I'll get right into it right now with the burning question on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
What is the best summer dessert?
You know, she's not here, so I guess I can say whatever I want. I've been hankering for like cold blueberries and peaches with a, you know, like a creme fraiche or a cream on top of it. It's refreshing and yet filling.
So no pie or anything, just straightforward?
Yeah, no, if you could throw that in a pie. My sister-in-law was in town this last weekend and made probably the best blueberry pie I've had in a long time. So, yeah, I like the pie. I like the pie better than the cake.
I can understand that. You know, maybe some ice cream on the side?
Sure. Yeah, something to wash it down.
What type of ice cream? Are we talking like sherbet type of thing?
Well, if I really had my way, I guess I'd go for some kind of gelato. You know, and then kind of keep it basic, vanilla bean gelato or something like that.
Mm, no, totally understand. I mean, gelato is amazing, amazing dessert because it can be plain vanilla and it would be excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're on the risk of mucking it up if you get too many flavors going on with that.
Yeah, there's a brand out there that I kind of enjoy, and I enjoy like their double Dutch chocolate, you know, but if you go too, I think you're right, if you go too extreme, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you might as well have ice cream.
You might as well, or Ben and Jerry's, you know, where they can throw anything into it and it's fine.
Yeah.
I became obsessed with their fudge brownie one recently.
That's good. It's good. Yeah, now I've had that, and I'm working my way through a Cherry Garcia, the old standby.
I got a pint of that recently, and I was like, oh, I haven't had this in ages, and I found that, okay, I don't enjoy it as much as I used to.
Well, you know, things change.
Yeah, they say your palate changes about every 7 years.
Right, just like your skin and everything else.
Yeah, your taste buds recycle, so you end up liking more foods.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I hated all vegetables. That's it, just no vegetables in my life. Now, okay, I can deal with like broccoli and such, I like it.
All right, that's good for you.
Yeah, spinach, kale.
All the greens.
Yeah. Well, lettuce aside, I don't believe in lettuce.
Lettuce. Yeah, there's not much going on in lettuce.
It's
anyway.
It's a pointless thing. It's just water and leaf. It's pointless. No need for it.
It's true.
So in your household, you do a lot of home cooking, I'm assuming.
I try to. I like to cook. I wind up taking much longer than it probably deserves. But I like it's kind of calming.
What is there like a signature dish that you have?
I do a pretty good Alfredo, something like a chicken Alfredo type thing. I like to grill a lot.
Hmm.
So that's just fire and
meat.
Fire and meat and vegetables.
But it comes down to the sauce, especially when you're barbecuing.
It's true. It's true. And I'm still experimenting with it. I'd like to get a smoker.
Ooh.
And then you can just leave it in there for, you know, a day, and then it's done. And pretty good, I bet.
Do you prefer dry rub or wet rub?
I'm coming around to the dry rub, which is sort of new to me. But I like it, because then you have your option of, doing it, saucing it up or not.
Mm. Well, you're from Illinois, so I'm thinking more wet rub. You know, would make sense.
That's what I sort of grew up with, and so it was a little strange to come down here and not have that, or just to get a pile of meat on your plate. So,
any secret recipe tips for us, for those of us who enjoy good barbecue?
No, not really. I don't know that I'm that qualified. A little brown sugar in the rub. It's nice.
Ooh.
Not too much, but it'll balance out whatever sort of spice you have, and then a little sweetness to it.
My wife introduced me to using mustard in the sauce.
I like mustard, yeah. My wife doesn't like mustard, so I've been off the mustard for a bit. But
I could never have expected it. This was like, what the? And then suddenly she's like, no, you put mustard and you put Old Bay seasoning in this, and it comes out great. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, the old stone ground mustard stuff is great.
Well, I mean, you can even, she's even used like French's, you know, that standard, you know, here's, you know, not bargain basement or anything, but, you know, yeah. Nothing too fancy. You don't have to go Grey Poupon on this one.
Right. Oh, that sounds good. I give that a shot.
There is nothing better than a summer barbecue.
Yeah.
I'm saying this, of course, right after lunch, of course, you know.
Well, I haven't eaten lunch, so this is working to generate an appetite.
Yeah, technically I haven't either. I had a bowl of cereal and yogurt, and that's like late breakfast this morning.
That's good. Yeah. Throw some kale in there, you're ready to go.
Exactly. Kale and Rice Krispies, greatest combination ever. Let's not give Kellogg's any ideas. They're going to come out with Rice Krispies, you know.
It's coming.
And gluten-free. I don't have a problem with gluten-free people, except that they just feel this need to announce it all the time.
There's a lot of people trying to put their, have their t-shirt be red.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. It just seemed to come out overnight suddenly, and I'm not invalidating anybody who has an actual gluten allergy. mind you, because I recognize it's a serious thing, but it seemed like it just suddenly sprang up, and so it's become this major issue.
Yeah, I don't know. We have lots of issues these days.
Mm. Well, I don't want to get into those if you don't, because because I know that there's been serious issues in your world.
Yeah, but, no, we've been busy.
Yeah. I know, now we've just made it cryptic, and the listeners are like, well, now you got to tell us. You know,
no, that's all right. Yeah, no, I guess the short story is my wife and I had a child over a year ago, 12 months and 3 weeks or so, but he was severely premature. He was 3 months early. He weighed a pound, and he spent 9 months in the hospital before we could bring him home. Oof. And he's home now, and he's doing great. But he has pretty significant lung issues, lung damage from prematurity and other issues. So he's on a ventilator and on oxygen. And we have a nursing staff who's in the house 24 hours a day. And so our lives have changed, but significantly.
Is there hope that as he grows up, his lungs will get stronger?
Yeah, that's exactly the idea. So,
and eventually the ventilator and all that, he won't need it.
Yeah, that's the plan.
You watch it, like in 4 or 5 years, he'll be wanting to play soccer or something.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing really well, actually, and that's the plan. By age of 4 or 5 or so, he should be off any machines and running around. So
being just a normal little child running around having a good time.
That's right. That's what we're shooting for.
Well, best. So, yeah,
but he's a happy kid now, so we just try and keep him happy.
Yeah, and he's home, and so it must be a lot of fun having him around.
Yeah, no, it's great. It means that we don't have to go to the hospital every day.
And he can be comfortable in the house and, you know, with you guys all the time.
Yeah, no, he's progressed most significantly since he's been home. He's been home for about 4.5 months or so, 3.5. And he's sort of taken off, so he's putting on weight and doing things that babies do, pooping and throwing up and all that stuff.
Starting to get to that point, has he begun talking yet?
Yeah, he's pretty vocal. Nothing discernible yet, but he's pretty vocal. And
like syllabics right now.
Yeah, but we have good conversations nevertheless.
Is he your first child?
He is for both of us.
It's got to be an amazing experience. I can only imagine what that's like because I'm childless and probably will be the rest of my life.
So well, it's. I mean, I thought I might be, but we got lucky, and yeah, no, I mean, in having a child in itself is kind of earth shaking, but we kind of went about it. We had a little bit of a different kind of earthquake related to it. So we've got all the sort of new parent issues and then a whole bunch of medical stuff.
A whole thing on top of it that you did not see coming.
Right.
But so. Hey, and no, it's great to hear because I followed you on Facebook for, you know, since I met you at AWP, 2 years ago, thereabouts, something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've seen the pictures and I got to say, just, you know, from my untrained experience, he's a very adorable child.
Well, yeah, he is. The girls or the boys, I don't know. We'll see. They're going to be in trouble.
Never know. He's going to. Well, we'll just put it this way. He's going to be a heartbreaker.
That's right.
As he ages, he's going to be one of those heartbreakers.
Yeah. No, he's a cute kid.
Yeah. I was very happy to see the photos of him back at home. I'm like, yay, he's home. That's got to be a great relief. I can only imagine the stress you were under having to tackle, you know, living the business of living, and then that on top of it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the truth. The business of living might have taken a hit.
But, I bet it had.
But yeah, I mean, it was stressful. But you know, I mean, you do what you have to do, and that's all you can do. So
yeah, when you become a parent, your priorities change. Suddenly, you're not living for yourself anymore.
Right. So you know, we keep chugging along, and he keeps getting better, and then we, you know, like you said, the business of living. So we both work and try and keep up friendships and all that stuff.
It's got to be rough, but at the same time, you wouldn't trade it for anything, I'm willing to bet.
Well, I would preferred that he wasn't born premature. If I had my way, I might do things a little differently, but I don't. What we've got now is fantastic. So,
and it's only going to get better from the way you're talking. It sounds like it's only going to get better as the months go on and the years go on.
We hope so. That's what we're working to make happen.
I truly, you know, from the bottom of my heart, I hope for the best and that he continues to improve and that we get to see photos. Those of you who follow Marcel and, you know, on Facebook, in a couple of years, we're seeing him running around and just causing absolute chaos.
Well, I keep saying that I look forward to the day that he steals my keys and takes the car. I don't know if I'll eat those words, but...
Or he takes the keys and flushes them down the toilet.
Yeah, or something, yeah.
Bye-bye, keys. Flush. Yeah.
So he's got toy keys, so he's practicing.
What is it about babies and keys? I don't know what the...
It's part of it is a tactile thing. Like, Shreve has also physical therapy and occupational therapy and speech therapy who come to the house or whatever. So I'm pretty well-versed. It's a tactile thing. So to close your hands in that sort of thumb to finger end, mm-hmm. and grasp something. So it trains kids to do that.
Is it also a sound thing?
Yeah, and a sound thing. It makes noise.
The rattling. So he has those toy plastic keys, those little knobby ones that we had as children?
Yep, those are pretty much the same.
That's good to see that some toys have not changed in 30 years when it comes to baby toys.
Yeah. You can get fancy ones that you can push the button and it sounds like the car door is opening. So they've kept up too, but they're still just keys.
It's just, you know, I think you can get away with just the basic plastic knob ones that we had, you know, multicolored.
Yeah, no, that's all he really cares about. So
keys are his thing. Yeah. Watch out for the day that he starts playing with your cell phone or your iPad or whatever have you.
Yeah. Well, we were already, it's a strange position. I always thought I'd never sort of use those things. But the iPad's got a ton of, like, great developmental apps and stuff. To, like, you know, direct his attention and focus and stuff. So there is some good things about the new technology, even though I'd rather him play with sticks like I did. But you know,
I totally get you.
We'll give him sticks soon.
When I was a kid, one of the greatest gifts I got was just a big bucket of random Legos.
Yeah, they're fun.
Because I could build whatever I wanted. I had imagination.
Yeah.
Now I'm bothered that you can't really, you struggle in the toy store to find big tub of Legos or Duplos. Now it's all predetermined sets.
Yeah, right.
You know, pirates, you know, here's the pirate set, here's the ninja set, here's the space set. Why can't I just have a tub where I can give it to the children and say, build a house with this, whatever you think the house should look like. Go.
Yeah, or, you know, or just pile them up and knock them over or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't know.
I miss
those. So you gotta buy a bunch of kits and then mix them all up.
Yeah, or just start hitting up every garage sale you can.
Yeah.
Buy them for like, here, you know, here's a bag of Legos for 50 cents. Sold.
Yeah, no, that would be a deal, actually.
Yeah. what were some of your favorite toys as a child? I'm curious.
My sort of go-to joke is that I just had sticks, and if I was lucky, I got an extra stick for Christmas. That's not true, but I do remember sort of kind of rudimentary things like it wasn't an erector set, but it was a kind of wooden thing that you put, you know, you can build stuff with, those kind of things.
Like Lincoln Logs?
Yeah, but they were like that, but they had sort of kind of like the erector set where you had screws and, you know, bolts and screws and all that stuff, but it was made out of wood. So that sort of thing. I kind of liked those kinds of things and puzzles a little bit. And then, you know, I played soccer, so I used to kick stuff.
Rocks, bricks, yeah. Tires, yeah. Didn't matter what it was. I'd kick it.
Yeah. But I was thinking about that the other day, sort of favorite toys, and it's for some reason it's hard to sort of look back and say, hey, that was a lot of fun. That was a really fun toy, other than sort of particular memories. associated with random things.
Are you gonna share some of your favorite toys with your son?
Well, I don't have any of those things. I'm trying to get him the stick, but Laura won't let me give him a stick.
Not yet.
Yeah. Well, I keep telling him now that the lawn's not going to mow itself, so he's got some work to do. getting a stick is a first start.
Yeah, hold him up in front of the window of the house and be like, "See that lawn?
That's
you're
right.
Be mowing that in a couple of years."
I do it. No, my dad made this little step stool for me when I was a real little kid, and it's one of the only things I have from when I was a baby. So he'll get that. It's not really a toy; it's just something to stand on. But be creative.
Merry Christmas, son. Here's a stool for you.
I don't know. I think in terms of stuff or kinds of toys, no, there's not really a whole lot I would be passing down, other than, I guess, just the activities that go along with whatever toys are that you happen to be playing with. So
yeah. Things like puzzles, thinking things that,
he wants to go, I don't know, play, we're going to run around and all that. So
you got to do that, and you got to let them go a little bit and get not injured, but every child has to go through of getting a scrape here and there or get stung by a bee so that we can figure out what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I
worry about some parents I know who are like, I want my child to be, basically they put them in the protective bubble of everything.
Yeah.
And they're surrounded by plastic shielding on all sides. They don't get to play anymore.
Yeah, no, we're going to, we're pretty protective given his whole medical situation. But once he's good to go, we're going to let him loose.
Yeah, let him play. Let him experience what it's like to eat dirt. both getting thrown down in the dirt and also just eating it voluntarily.
Yeah. We'll see about that one.
Well, you're in Tennessee, so there's a lot of good mountains and everything to experience nature and go climbing.
And we got good dirt.
And you got good dirt, yes. I've played in that dirt many a time and had it caked on my clothing now that I've been up to the farm, Firefly, multiple times.
Yeah, of course. I think I missed you last time you were in town.
Yeah, I was up there for about a few weeks this summer, and I saw that you came by afterwards, but you were in my thoughts because I was asking Aaron. I'm like, have you talked to Marcel recently? How's he doing these days?
Oh, thanks.
So, I'd like to see what's going on and everything.
Yeah.
But, so we're talking about childhood toys and everything. I liked building stuff as well. I had my Legos. I also had Constructs, which I really do miss. They were a plastic, all the toys were made like girders. For example, girders, and you would connect them to small blue squares that were six-sided and create right angles and everything. But you could do amazing stuff with them.
Cool.
So I remember that was one of my favorites as a child. Were there any things that you were obsessed with as a child? Like, I was obsessed with He-Man when I was a child.
Huh, that's interesting. Pop culturally, I think I'm sort of presenting myself as I lived in the woods or whatever, but that's not really true. But I didn't really watch TV or whatever. So we had one TV, and it was in the TV room, and we only watched TV as a family. And so I missed out on the Brady Bunch phenomenon. And
you didn't miss much on that one.
Well, I mean, I became aware of it, obviously, because everybody else was talking about it. But so some of those sorts of things I don't really have, but the... What was the question? Oh, sort
just
of
your childhood obsessions.
Yeah. So I remember one kind of fantasy that I had, and I kind of still do, is I think I'd be a good cat burglar, and I'm not a whatever, but because it always impressed me, to go in and climb over the window ledge or whatever, and then nobody knows that you're there, but then you've done something, and so I'm way too clumsy. But I remember as a kid, I would be walking around and oh, there's a window, and I never did anything about it. But that was a kind of obsession that didn't go anywhere, but it kept me occupied.
Yeah, that idea of walking around, and when you play games, you were the thief character.
Yeah, or this kind of invisibility thing, which was kind of neat. So along those lines, I read a lot, and so I read all these Hardy Boys books. I'd read one a day or whatever, and. Those kinds of things. And so that probably spurred some of that imagination.
So mystery, I'm thinking then mysteries were a big thing for you?
Yeah, I liked them. And I, in hindsight, realized that one of the reasons I liked them, but I didn't know it at the time, was the sort of the formula of those particular books, that on the first page they're going to introduce your two characters and as if you'd never read one before. And so since I'd read a bunch, I'd always skip to like page 10 because nothing ever happened. So anyway, thinking about, it's where I first started to think about sort of structure without actually thinking about it. And so then I could, knowing that, I could figure out the mystery a little bit better, because the sort of way the book was put together, by page 75, I will have gotten one major clue or something. That,
Do you read to your son?
I do. We do. We have some good, there's a lot of kids books out there. But the, which one did I get the other day? Well, I'm just doing a quick search here. The Frog Belly Rat. Yeah, I think that's it. The Story of Frog Belly Rat Bone.
Sounds like a blues guitar player.
I know, it's got soul.
The Story of Frog Bottom Rat Bone.
Yeah.
And his so magical guitar.
It's got some kind of interesting drawings, and it's about this, you know, this kind of rat guy. And he builds a kind of scarecrow, which is Frog Belly Rat Bone, and the scarecrow comes alive, and they beat the bad guys. But it's good. So yeah, that's a little long for him, and he doesn't really get it, but. And then everything from that down to Color Yellow and that sort of thing.
The one-word books.
Yeah.
One-word books.
But he's learning to turn pages by himself, so that bodes well.
So he'll do the rewind button on the book then and annoy you. Like, no, got to go on.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe. Or just to review.
Or just a review and kind of go, okay, because he's processing, okay, moment to moment. Okay, this leads to this. It's even at 1 year old, you start figuring out action, consequence, action, consequence.
That's right. Yeah, no, so he's a sharp guy.
Because I was said now, as a related thing, you know, I always felt that I would take, if I had a child, I would go the 3 men and a baby route, where I would be reading them what other people would consider the most inappropriate stuff for a child, but it doesn't matter. It's about the tone you use. So, yeah, I would be reading them Allen Ginsberg in the Cradle. You know, nothing too gross or anything. I wouldn't be reading, like, the master poem or whatever, but I'd read them, you know, like, in a supermarket in California.
Yeah, that's good.
Or if they were, you know, music-wise. Yeah, lullabies are fine, and they have those discs that are rock and roll songs for, you know, done as lullabies, but I'd be singing and playing them Led Zeppelin or Frank Zappa in the Cradle.
Yeah, no, he gets exposed to a fair amount now. I'm not really that concerned about that it has to be a certain kind of anything. Mm-hmm. So he hears what I hear, and he'll read what I read.
And he responds to it in his own way.
Yeah, no, he's trying to make sense of it all.
I had a friend, their first child is about 2 now, and he became obsessed with singer-songwriters. Like, as a 1-year-old, he loved the sound of Tom Waits.
That's good.
And so I said, okay, let's try a couple of different pieces of music here, see what he responds to. And so I pulled up the Ramones on my phone, and he freaked out. He started crying. He was freaked out by the Ramones. And I'm like, okay, I'll shut it off. And I said, and then I looked at him, you know, very gently and said, when you're about 15, you're going to come back to this.
And probably stay there for a while.
And probably stay there for a while, yeah. It's the one band I wish I could go back in time and, like, give myself a copy of, like, the Ramones' Toughest Hits and be like, here, you're going to need this. Nirvana's not cutting it enough for you right now, kiddo.
Yeah. I think both of those have those lullaby. They have a lullaby of Nirvana.
They do. I've pulled them up on Amazon to listen to a couple of the tracks. They all sound the same, except
yeah,
that I can get
slow down.
Just a melody. I haven't seen, or I've seen the, or even Rush has one. I have not seen a Frank Zappa one yet. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, I just play him straight.
I'm curious what albums you would throw at him, because I know you're a big Zappa fan, as am I, actually.
Yeah, I am. I don't know, something, you know, the quieter ones, Waka Jawaka, or...
Francesco Zappa might work, the classical
ones. Yeah, the classical ones. Yeah, those probably more so, if I, you know, but anything sort of in the background is in the background, so...
Right, he can't necessarily decipher the lyrics or anything yet.
Yeah.
It's just about sound.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's in the background, it doesn't necessarily have to, I don't really worry about it. We usually have classical music happening all day long.
They said classical music helps babies learn. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I like having music on, and we have, you know, like I said, we have nurses, and so we have a happy medium between, and it keeps for a calm
house. So. What about your wife? Does she approve of, like, him listening to rock and roll and such and just that young?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what am I trying to say? We don't really disagree as far as that's concerned. She sings to him a lot more than I do.
Mm.
And is always making up new songs and sort of providing a narrative for him. So all of his teeth are named by... Huh. He's got 5 teeth now. They all have names. And so, you know, she kind of does that and sings songs with him. And so she provides the rock and roll.
You're just kind of in the background going, eh, just throw on something in the background.
Yeah, I'm playing a mean stereo.
Exactly.
Yes.
So you don't sing to him that much then?
Not so much, but I play a little guitar, and so I've been playing for him a little bit. And he got a ukulele for his first birthday.
Aw.
Plunking away at that stuff. He's really interested in the guitar, only because, well, I don't know why, but because he can watch two hands doing different things, and then he hears something, and it's kind of mysterious to him.
Monkey see, monkey do kind of thing, too.
Yeah, so he keeps looking from one hand to the other hand, and sort of, you know, what's going on, and how is that working, and so...
Sees Daddy playing it, might as well try it himself.
Yeah, so, and then he'll reach out and strum a string, and be weirded out, and that's good.
Weirded out in the good way, like starting to giggle and go like, wow, I do something and something happens.
Yeah. So that's all good. Yeah.
That's gonna be a fun thing to see as a parent, is like something that is, you know, common to you becomes magical to the first experience.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, so far that's where it's all at. Yeah, and that happens every day.
Wait until he becomes more cognizant of Christmas and everything around it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's some things we might be trying to hold off, but we'll deal with that when it comes.
It's like the first couple of years you have a child, Christmas is really easy because you can give them anything and they're happy.
Yeah.
Wait until they start realizing what desire is and what want is.
Yeah, well, I got through that phase. So, we'll get through it.
Everybody does. You know, you get to the point where I'm in my 30s now, and it's at Christmas time, my wife says, what do you want for Christmas this year? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really need anything. Look at my Amazon wish list. There's things there.
Yeah.
You know. Or my mother has the instinct still of, you need new pants this Christmas. And I get to that point now where I'm like, wow, clothing. How did you know I actually want this? I actually need this.
Because you never shop for it yourself.
Exactly. It's like, wow, I didn't realize my socks were so bad. I need to go get more socks. Huh. Who would have thought? So coming back to the mysteries and everything, do you ever watch shows that... Well, currently there's a whole new generation of these crime detective shows and everything.
Yeah.
But did you watch them growing up, like Murder, She Wrote or Columbo?
Yeah, we did. We watched Murder, She Wrote every Sunday because it was right after 60 Minutes.
Hmm.
On CBS, and 60 Minutes was on at 6 o'clock, and then Murder, She Wrote was right after that. And so, a lot of Cabot Cove is.
Mrs. Fletcher.
she was something. But there too, like after a while, like you knew, I figured out that, you know, within the first, before the first commercial, you'll have your crime, and then the second, you know. So, sort of, again, like, looking, they're entertaining, and I still like those kinds of shows, but sort of figuring out how they're put together interested me then. So, like, now, I guess we're watching, it's this BBC thing called The Fall.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, with, what's her name, Gillian Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's good. It's a cop murder thing that happens in Belfast. And, yeah, it's so far so good. We're a few episodes in. But like those BBC things, there's only like 5 or 6 episodes total. So,
yeah,
so it's short and sweet.
Because they do it, the BBC system is a lot different than American television. You have maybe 6 episodes, and that constitutes a series, which is a season, basically, for more or less in America, which is, on average, 13 to 26 episodes, depending on the show and the network.
Right.
So, yeah you can get through a BBC series pretty quickly.
But that's pretty good.
Well, it's good to see Gillian Anderson working again and in the limelight again, though.
Yeah, no, she's good. She's got I know from, like, her personal history that she spent time in London, like, she grew up there or something. Her accent is, you know, it's fine.
it's passable.
Yeah, but she does sound like she's putting on an accent as opposed to, you know, whatever. But she's good. It's an interesting show.
I might have to pull up an episode or two and see about it.
Yeah.
I just weaseled my way through House of Cards.
The American. That's a good way to put it.
Indeed. The American version, obviously, because I haven't gotten a hold of the UK one yet. But no, I was very impressed with it. I said, okay, I can see what everybody's going on it. I have my criticisms of it. And I won't give it 5 stars on Netflix. I'll give it 4. I have some issues. But for the most part, I was like, okay, I can see why everybody's enjoying this.
Yeah, no, it was fun. You know, it's a fantasy show.
It's a fantasy, but what's scary is that it feels real.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, that's how they get you.
And I agree with the fantasy because I'm watching some of the hacking scenes, and I'm not going to give spoilers away, obviously, but some of the computer espionage, and I'm like, okay, this feels a little bit off.
Yeah.
It feels like...
Yeah, no, that was... But yeah, no, it was fun. It was good television.
So are there any, getting back to mysteries or anything, are there any detectives that you really like, that's one of my favorite detectives to pay attention to?
I'm so dated. I'm terrible.
Well, that's fine, because my number one choice is a very dated one.
I mean, I like, because it kind of started it all, I like the whole Sherlock resurgence that's been happening within the last... I don't necessarily like all the shows or whatever, but sort of the Sherlock Holmes model. So I don't understand why there's the Sherlock TV show and then there's the movies and then the BBC one, why all those things are happening at the same time. But I like the, you know, the deductive kind of smart guy detective.
And that's kind of what Jessica Fletcher is on Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, exactly.
Just got an element of that. Now, yeah, I'll go ahead and date myself and say that my favorite one is still Lieutenant Columbo, Peter Falk.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Still pull those up on Netflix every now and then just to watch an episode and remind myself.
Yeah, no, those are fun. And that was one of the only shows one of the first shows that, like, told the audience who did it before Peter Falk knew.
It was the reverse mystery. You knew in the first 10 minutes
right. Who
killed who. Why, not necessarily why, but how they did it. And the next hour and some change became, okay, how's Columbo going to figure out all the clues?
Right. Yeah, no, that was, I like that show a lot.
Sorry, excuse me, a little bit of a thing in the throat there. No, that's awesome. I was never a mystery, that much of a mystery person. It's the only one I ever really watched was Columbo. I couldn't really get into Murder, She Wrote or any detective shows.
I like them as sort of episodes, like you can digest them quickly. And, you know, Murder, She Wrote, it's a family show that's not all that, you know, biting about social satire or anything.
It's kind of like Matlock in that way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, I don't know. I like those, and along those lines, sort of international espionage type movies and stuff. So all those
James Bond series.
Yeah, all that stuff. We watched that as when I was a kid. Yeah, I really like that.
I found the James Bond series. It's scattershot. Some are really, really good, and some you just kind of want to sweep under the rug and forget about.
Yeah, no, they're mostly ridiculous, but they're a lot of fun. And,
they're great popcorn films.
Yeah,
I won't argue that. And some are better than others. Some require more popcorn than others.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm one of the few defenders, I feel, of Octopussy. I think it's a great one. The tension build up at the end with the train is wonderful.
Yeah.
But then he does, you know, A View to a Kill, and Christopher Walken aside and Grace Jones aside, I'm like, you're 80,000 years old. You're not a 30-year-old secrets agent anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're problematic. I've been liking the recent ones, the Daniel Craig ones.
I have too. The Quantum of Solace bothered me a lot because it just the editing on it was so MTV quick cut that you couldn't really even see what was going on in the action sequences.
Yeah.
So I gave up on Quantum, and but I do I liked Skyfall for the most part, and I loved Casino Royale.
Yeah, I did too. I enjoyed that one a lot.
Testicle torture aside, I think that's a great film.
Well, like, added to the visceral quality of it all.
It's like, yes, I need to see Daniel Craig completely naked getting his testicles hit with a rope. Thank you. Well, it's that whole idea of rebooting everything and making it more gritty and realistic.
Yeah, well, it's the postmodern era, or I don't know.
I think, are we still in the postmodern era, or are we past that now into something else?
I don't know. They say that we've sort of shed that, but I don't know. As with all these things, it takes 100 years to figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to somebody recently, a good friend of mine, and I said, I think things changed really after 9/11 is a turning point, because as a Gen Xer, in the 90s, we were the epitome of cynicism and nihilism, and then and apathy, and then after 9/11, suddenly it wasn't sarcastic or ironic anymore for us.
Yeah, I'll buy that to a degree. I mean, I think 9/11 will be a sort of turning point. But I don't know that, I mean, I'm Gen X too. I don't know that we've gotten more real or anything as a result of, other than sort of growing up and all that, but.
Or I wonder if we backslided.
Yeah, I mean, our generation didn't volunteer to go to Iraq or Afghanistan.
It's true. We were kind of, you know, not drafted into it, but brought into it kind of against our will. And the first Gulf War was 2 months long or 3 months long, something like that.
Right.
There wasn't really a war.
Right.
In our eyes. And then, you know, I think, though, that in the last few years, I've been noticing a lot more apathy, a lot more cynicism toward things.
What level?
Well, I think, and I'm not bringing politics into this because your personal politics are yours and mine are mine, but I think something happened during the Bush years where a lot of people just, I want to say shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report helped foster this feeling of, we've got to start being skeptical and critical of everything, both sides of the aisle now.
Yeah, no, that's probably true, but you could probably find that. It maybe needed to be sort of prodded in the butt, you know, because Watergate arguably did that too.
Yeah, loss of innocence suddenly now, wait a minute, no, there's real crimes being committed here.
So, you know, I think probably every generation has got its wake-up call to some degree.
I wonder if it's the internet. The rise of the internet and the ability to get all these different viewpoints.
Maybe. I mean, it's a lot of information that people aren't used to digesting. And so maybe they choose not to.
It's like during the, when Cosmos was airing on Fox this spring, you know, there was this whole thing about all these creationists saying, you know, we need equal airtime now and all that. And somebody was telling me, it's like, they wouldn't do that during Carl Sagan's day. And I said, no, they were. They just didn't have a platform to speak from that was large enough that people could hear them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. No, they're very organized.
The internet makes it easy to organize and find people who share similar beliefs to you.
Yeah. But I don't know, would you say that the internet then causes those things, or it just makes them easier to deal with, or easier to, I don't know, to organize?
I think it's more the latter. I think the ideas have always been there, but it's easier to be seen and to find people who follow you, because 20 years ago, 30 years ago, these kind of things were in their basement.
True.
You know, somebody's basement, like Dungeons and Dragons or similar things. You know, they were limited to somebody's basement and a small group of people. But now I can connect with Star Trek fans in Europe and in Australia, and we are all in one basement together.
Right, but you still have that sort of basement. I mean, I agree with you. But those connections that you had with your Dungeons and Dragons friends, I bet are stronger than the ones you're making online with people you don't know.
Mm.
Right? And so if I was really into Dungeons and Dragons, or I was really an anti-liberal political person or whatever, I would have to work harder to find those people, and arguably I'd have to make a stronger case. Whereas on the internet, I can make any kind of crazy case, and you'll always find somebody who likes it. But it may, I don't know really what I'm saying here, but it may not have as much kind of intellectual heft to it, because it hasn't done the work of getting out of your basement and going to the local town hall or whatever the issue might be.
Really? Well, no, I agree on that. I don't know, though, with Skype, with Twitter, with all this social media, and with streaming media becoming much easier to do.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got a television studio on their phone now.
Right.
I wonder if that basement community is becoming stronger, that people that you share things with, you get to see them, talk to them, if it's becoming that closeness of the basement again, rather than we're just typing anonymous messages to each other.
Yeah. No, that's probably true. I mean, it's becoming, everything's sort of more immediate, so the wall between the real basement and the virtual basement is, you know, hard to distinguish.
And it, you know, it's, in some ways it's good. I mean, as a writer, and you know, both of us are writers, you connect easier with writers. You know, it's easier to find people that you can connect with and share support and all that for your work.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's true.
It's easier to also get the critics and everything going, you suck, but, you know.
Well, right. Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, networking and all that is, that's much easier.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than just making, you know, having to go to every cocktail party, basically, and getting your ads out of the back of Poets and Writers or something and be like, oh, there's a contest. And now, yeah. Oh, I get it delivered to my email inbox.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think anything gets easier, though. It's just a different kind of negotiation. So, you know, back in the day, they didn't have sort of, you know, bulletin boards, online bulletin boards for job openings. So I always wondered, like, how did these people get jobs, especially in academia? And I was told, well, it helps to know somebody who's leaving their job. Okay, well, what if you don't know that? And you just hear about them. And so that's a really inefficient system. Now we hear about all of them, and we know, you know, pretty much the minute anybody gets a job offer or a request for more information, we know that almost instantaneously, and it's still just as hard. Like, so, right?
Yeah, I mean,
nothing's really changed. It's just the end result is the same. Just sort of the amount of, I don't know, the way you get there is changed.
Rejection is rejection.
Yeah. But that applies to everything. Like, you know, I play guitar, so I watch a lot of, like, YouTube videos on how to play guitar. But it's going to take me just as long to become good with YouTube videos or without them if I have a teacher or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just going to take me doing the work to get good.
It's the same as, okay, I'm looking over the Mel Bay chord book.
Right.
Same deal.
Yeah. So, you know, you got to learn all that stuff. You got to sort of do the work. And so
it's just the medium, the transfer of information has changed, but the information hasn't.
Right. Yeah. And then, and the information has changed, but you have to understand how it got there and all that stuff too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's new songs to learn. There's new styles. There's new techniques being done.
Sure.
I don't know. Has there been much guitar innovation in the last 10 years? Because I can't really think of, is there anything that's just come out that's revolutionized it?
Like the instrument?
Or, you know, how it's played, how it's perceived. Because you think back to Hendrix, blew all of our minds open with things like feedback and different effects pedals and style moves. And then people like Steve Vai and Yngwie Malmsteen did the same, and Joe Satriani. Mm. But then has there been anybody really since the mid-90s who's done anything new?
I don't know. I think there's good guitar players out there, but we don't live in a guitar-dominated music scene,
mm-hmm.
whereas we used to in the 60s and 70s. So you don't hear that as much. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I'm just wondering now about any genre. Do we have much innovation going on? Auto-tune did a lot for making remixes and such, and fixing people who don't sound that good. But has there been really any innovation in music?
That's a big question.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, on the one hand, like every time you play a song, you're innovating somehow. That's a half-assed response, though. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not. I think that they're just like with any art, you're not going to see the. It's very rare to have a sort of flash in the pan moment, a 9/11 or whatever for art. So I don't know that we can point to anything specifically, but I don't know, the new, it's not new anymore, but sort of the electronic wave, whatever sort of capacity, you know, dance or techno or whatever, sort of continues that conversation of the basement thing. Right? It's all, you know, you now have DJs, you go to a concert to watch a DJ. And I remember the first time I saw that, I thought it was really strange. Because I'm just standing there watching a guy play on his computer.
Mm.
And that's what it was. It was a guy standing behind his computer. And it was hooked up to a lot of amps and big speakers. And yeah, so it was cool. But it wasn't what I thought of when I think of like a concert.
Yeah.
Or a performance for that matter.
No, I totally understand. I was a mobile disc jockey for a long time. And on the basically the dying end of the CD era of using CDs and flipping discs and dual deck. And when I left it, people were just starting to use their iPods a lot more. Here's my catalog of songs. You know, I don't even have to flip records anymore. I don't have to pull CDs. It's all on here.
Right.
And now it's all laptop based.
Yeah.
You know, I'm missing a song. Somebody requests, hey, do you have this particular Lynyrd Skynyrd song? Give me 5 minutes. And I'll have it for you.
Yeah.
And that ruins it a little bit because I used requests as a way to get back at people I didn't like, at the show or whatever. And they're like, just drunk and annoying me. I'd be like, no, man, I don't have your song. Or it's coming up later. It's coming up later.
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
No.
I can still throw my headphones on and pretend that I'm ignoring you completely.
Yeah.
That's still there, but hopefully that never goes away.
Right.
Because I did that at least a couple of weddings where some drunk family member was like, can you play the chicken dance? What?
That's a classic.
Sorry, I got the headphones on. What was that? I'm ignoring you. I get 30 seconds of peace.
Before I get the chicken dance.
I can just pull up my finger, you know, hold up a finger and then look at the, and then I specifically had a couple of, on the mixer, a couple channels that I wasn't using so that I could adjust them and fake the people out that I was actually doing something when I wasn't.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I'd do something similar. I'd walk down the street with a phone to my ear.
I think we've all pulled that trick before to get out of an awkward conversation. Like, just hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, step out for a moment.
Right.
So,
sorry.
No, it's all good. So I got, you know, part of the reason we brought you on this one is I want to talk to you about what it's like being, I don't think we've ever had a writing couple on the show.
Uh-huh.
So I find that kind of interesting because I'm part of one myself. My wife and I are both writers. And I'm just, how do you negotiate that as in a relationship? We're not going to get into too much artwork and everything here. It's not this program, but how do you negotiate that with two different writers in the house?
Well, it's, I mean, it's interesting. We first try and figure out how to negotiate being a writer in the first place. And then, yeah, work it out together. We have since, because of our sort of recent situation, we have had to combine our offices. So my desk is right next to hers, to Laura's now. And so it makes for close quarters. And that's fine. We've been doing well with it. But I think it's, I think one thing that we probably have to get better at is just on a personal level of devoting time to writing. And we both kind of struggle with that, and more so lately, just because of everything. But,
life takes precedent.
Yeah. So, once we establish that, then whatever the other person needs to make that time as valuable as possible, you know, the other one will try and give it.
When you guys, you know, before the child came along and everything, and you guys were writing, you know, much more, and obviously, you know, did you guys support each other in terms of writing? Like, would you, you know, have, you know, for example, I drafted this thing. Here, take a look at it.
Yes, somewhat. Not a whole lot. You know, she sees everything that is almost ready to be published, but she may not see early, or may not see early drafts, but then nobody will.
Until you're dead and they publish your collected works.
Well, yeah, no. Nobody will until I, like, feel good about them, but that's a different thing. We talk about writing a good bit, sort of things we're working on, but in the drafting stage, where we spend most of our time, actually. No, we don't see a whole lot. We've done a couple times write together. I mean, not on the same thing, but, you know, okay, now we're going to devote, I don't know, 5 hours or whatever to writing. And I've done my specialty or my focus is poetry, but we sort of challenged ourselves to write, you know, what was it, 12 pages of fiction or something, which was excruciating for me. Though, you know, I enjoyed it and sort of, you know, forcing yourself to do that.
Is she's prose?
Yeah, she writes fiction.
Okay. So you come at it with completely different genres then.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah. So in that way, you know, there's no competition, but our sort of the way we think about what we do is different. So that, I mean, I read lots of fiction and she reads some poetry too. So, we talk about books among other things, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Now, did she keep, you know, did she keep her maiden name when she married you?
She did. So she's Laura Hoffer. And while our son was in the hospital for those 9 months, he had her last name. So every time we would go to visit, we had to ask for Shreve Hoffer. And then when he was discharged, he magically got my last name. So it was just a little quirk of the, I don't know, bureaucracy. But
and then eventually he can choose which name he wants, you know.
I guess so, yeah. He's got that option.
It's up to him.
We'll see. But yeah, so she kept her maiden name.
Yeah, I had the same experience with my wife when we talked about it. She said, look, I've been published a lot under my own name, and it would be confusing to just suddenly have a new name and everything, and I just don't want to do that, you know, career thing. And I said, no, I totally understand. I don't want to give up my name. I love my surname, and I've been published under that name, so let's just keep it separate then.
Yeah. No, it's enlightened times.
No, enlightened times, especially in the writing world.
Well, you do what you have to do, and no. So, I mean, as far as that's concerned, it's all that's all good.
Now, did you guys meet each other in a program?
Not really. I finished my graduate work in 2006, and then was hired as a lecturer at the University of Tennessee for the following fall. And so I got here in fall of 2006, and Laura was finishing up her PhD program. So we became acquainted because she was sort of in the PhD program. I was new to town, just out of the PhD, but teaching. And so we traveled in similar circles for about a year. But no, she was finishing her studies, and I was done with them and ostensibly knew everything.
I gotcha. So it wasn't that you were in the same program, but you're right around, you're traveling the same circles, that sort of thing, yeah.
Right.
And just one thing leads to the other, you know. And you
start, the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, you just start reading each other's work, and next thing you know, I know how that is.
Well, it's funny because Laura did a reading before we were together, and my brother and now sister-in-law were in town, and they went to the reading. And they said afterwards that I should go after her, and I, you know, oh, that's funny, but then, you know, she went after me actually,
yeah.
And now here we are.
I understand. My wife went after me, and I being a dumb man and dumb person, just didn't even realize that she was even interested in me.
Yeah, it's a deficiency, I think, but it works out sometimes.
I had a terrible tendency in all relationships to be completely blind to what was going on in the early stages. So you practically had to look me dead in the eye and say, listen, I like you. I want to be with you. Because otherwise I wouldn't know.
Right. I totally understand that.
So were you intimidated by each other's work when you started dating each other? And you started reading each other's work?
I don't know that intimidated is the right word. What I appreciated about Laura's work is sort of the groundedness of it. And she writes a lot about place, East Tennessee in particular, and being someone new to the area. I don't know, autographical or anything, but it felt right for the experience I was having to this new place. And so I figured, you know, if somebody can do that, then that's good. So I don't know about intimidated. She does something I can't do, which is that kind of rootedness and sort of the larger picture of actually tell a story. I can't tell a story to save my life, so either in writing or in person, as most friends will attest to. So that's maybe why I gravitated towards poetry. I don't know. But I don't know if she was intimidated by me. She reads poetry, not a whole lot, but and she's very smart about it, though she doesn't believe me when I say that. I don't know if she was intimidated by my work.
Because I know I was intimidated by my wife's work early on and felt like I had no right to say anything. And now I'm at that point with her where I can listen to a draft and say, it's good, but something bothers me about the eighth line there. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, no, you should. I think that having that openness with somebody about your writing is important.
I still will hold back on a lot of drafts and be like, no, you're not seeing this. Nope, nope.
Yeah, well, and that's every writer's prerogative. So I do the same thing.
Yeah. So obviously, do you support each other when you go out to readings and such like that? If one of you is booked for a reading, you obviously have to be there to support the other.
Oh, we try to as best we can.
Do you find that you're each other's hype person?
Maybe that's maybe one way to think about it. As far as like readings go or whatever, I don't know. I mean, I guess we just do the reading. But yeah, I mean, you know, do a good job and that sort of thing, and knowing that the other person is out there rooting for you is obviously helpful. But I did a reading a couple weeks ago, and she wasn't able to be there. I think it went all right. Nobody threw anything at me.
I don't think I've ever been to a poetry reading where people start throwing things.
Yeah, it might make them interesting, but...
I might have to try that at AWP and try and do a reading where I can get people to start throwing stuff.
Well, it would make the newsletter.
I think it would. You know, start a riot, basically.
Yeah. Hmm. Are you going to the next one?
I'm going to try my best to be up there for Minneapolis, yeah.
Minneapolis is a fun town. It's going to be cold.
It's gonna be nice. They're doing it later this year in April, which I was like, thank you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
They're trying to avoid the winter, but I have friends in Minneapolis to say no. It's still gonna be cold. There's still gonna be snow probably.
Yeah, but it's a fun town.
But yeah, Minneapolis is built basically like an indoor habit trail, so you can walk. True. You can do all of downtown basically and never go outdoors.
Yeah.
If you know all the sidewalks and overpasses.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to do that, and I really want to go to Los Angeles in 2 years.
Oh, right.
Doing it out there on the West Coast. Although that one, I think, is one where I'd be like taking a week and a half off from work and be like, look, I've never been to Los Angeles. I got to spend some time there. There's some things I got to see.
My brother just moved out there, and I haven't been out to visit him yet, but he loves it.
I've heard some good and bad things from him, and I have a wife of a close friend who is from just outside of Los Angeles in the ranch country there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's got both good and bad stories about it. So I'm looking forward to her recommendations of places to go or things to do and eat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that helps anywhere you go.
Minneapolis, I'm told, has a nice comedy scene, a very nice theater scene, and just a basically a nice arts community there.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty healthy art scene, publishers, bookmakers, that sort of thing, and then theater as well. And it's good restaurants. It's a pretty young city too, because of the university being right there, and there's a few colleges in town, so that makes it fun too.
How often do you get up there? It sounds like you've been there a couple times before.
Well, I've only been there a handful of times. It's been 8 years since I've been there, but imagine it's similar to what it was like when I was there.
It's like I've gone there a number of times, and I just can't think of any bad times I've had there.
Yeah, no, it's all it's very nice. And I'm from Chicago, so the winter doesn't scare me as much as some of the people more southerly inclined. But in the summer, it's beautiful. Nice Midwest summer.
Yeah. No, I feel that way about Tennessee, that every time I've been to Tennessee, I've always had a good time.
Yeah, good.
Never a bad time in Tennessee, and I've been all through the state. The only major place I haven't gone to yet is Pigeon Forge.
Well, you put it on your bucket list.
I intend to, because I at least have to see it.
Yeah, no, it takes at least just one drive through.
Just to experience all the pamphlets I have read of that city.
No, it's something.
It's the Orlando of Tennessee.
That's right.
Just complete madness, and I would love to see it someday. Chicago, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, you're from Chicago, I'm not gonna bash on it or anything. It seems like almost my first experience with Chicago was a really bad experience, and so it has always kind of tainted my memory of that place.
That's too bad. What happened?
Just a bad situation. I went there for a convention, and a girl who had just broken up with me about a month before didn't want to cancel her ticket, so she came along. It was a road trip from New York, and we had a bad breakup, and it just caused a lot of tension.
Sounds like it would.
It was a, you know, the heartbreak was there. So Chicago was a downer that time, and then I went for AWP up to Chicago, and yeah, it mitigated some of the damage emotionally, the scars, but...
Well,
I want to go back and really experience the city and see, like, okay, this is what everybody's been talking about. This is what's awesome about Chicago.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's it's a fun town. It's good food. I guess I say that said that about Los Angeles or wherever, Minneapolis. But yeah, no, it's a food city, and it's got everything that like New York or LA has without
without the New York or LA.
Yeah, I guess that's a nice way to put it.
Plus, you can go down certain streets and suddenly go, wait a minute, this is where they filmed the car chase in the Blues Brothers.
It's true.
This street. I had that experience because I took my first time there. I took the afternoon and just took the bus tour thingy that just goes around in a circle and shows you things.
Yeah.
Really. And they're like, this street is famous in the Blues Brothers. I'm like, yes, it is. I know that scene.
The Blues Brothers car was an old Mount Prospect police car, and I grew up in Mount Prospect. So that was a kind of claim to fame that we had. So yeah, they got an impounded police car, and that's what they used in the film.
Yeah, the was it? I forget what it is, the 67 Olds or whatever.
Yeah.
Before Cadillac converter, so it runs on natural gas.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, we're almost out of time. Jeez, where did the time go on this one?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we covered anything. So what, you're going to edit this in some way?
I might edit. I'm not a big editor. Okay. I may remove – usually what I end up removing is me.
Okay.
Because I talk too much, in my opinion, so I cut stuff off me.
Okay.
I already have notes down here of things to cut off.
Okay.
People get enough of me from the promos and everything. So, yeah. But before we go –
yeah.
Anything upcoming that you're working on? Any readings? Anything coming up that you want to promote?
I don't have any readings scheduled, and neither does Laura, actually. But we're both. I'm working on. We're both just so sort of immersed in this other part of our lives with our son. So we've independently kind of thought to pursue that with sort of projects, and so I'm working on a collection. Poems that kind of, you know, considers some of the things that we went through, and it's, you know, in the hospital was a side of the world that most people thankfully don't get to see. So in some ways we're somewhat privileged to be able to get to know that space well. So I'm looking at some of those things, and then independently, Laura's sort of working on a more prose side on similar things. And so we haven't actually read much of each other's stuff, but it'll be interesting to see what we come to.
And see where the overlaps are and how you come at this whole thing in different genres. I think that would be a fascinating project.
Yeah, and we worked and we kept a pretty intensive sort of daily blog during the hospitalization period, and that wound up being, you know, I don't know, it was 9 months long, so at least a page a day. That's several hundred pages of stuff that we wound up writing, and we might do something with that.
It'd be interesting too when your son becomes a teenager, young adult, and you basically hand him the book and say, here was your first year.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, exactly. So we may do something with that. So we're, but for now, we're just trying to enjoy the summer and try and get some reading done. And
Just enjoy time as a family now that you're all together.
That's right.
So. And making good barbecue together.
We're trying.
So how can the folks find you and Laura online? Obviously on Facebook.
Yeah, and Facebook is probably the best for now. I'm working on a website just for me that I haven't quite gotten up yet. I'm hoping it'll be marcelbrowers.com, but I'm still working on that. And Facebook is probably the best space. And then I'm also sort of loosely affiliated with the Sundress. Well, not loosely, but there are links to me from Sundress publications.
Well, keep me posted on if you do put that website together. Shoot me a message about it. We'll throw it up on the Saftacast website. Let people know how to get a hold of you.
I will do it.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Marcel, it has been a pleasure. I'm sorry Laura did not join us, but I recognize...
And she wanted to. Things got hectic.
Things were going on, and that's the way of things. So that gives us a reason then, an excuse to talk with you guys again.
That sounds great.
Next time we can bring her both on, or or whatever and chat with you guys again. But it has been a pleasure, Marcel, having you on the show, man.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Oh, thanks a lot. You take care of yourself and take care of that young, awesome son of yours.
I'll do it.
Before we go, one last question.
Yeah.
Who do you got on the World Cup right now in the final?
Well, I know the
Netherlands are out.
Yeah.
I know it breaks your heart.
Yeah.
But you got Argentina and Germany.
But it was by penalty kick, so they didn't really lose. But then they didn't really win the previous game because they won that by penalty kicks too. I guess I want Argentina. I'm not married to that, but I'm gonna go with Argentina.
Okay. Even though they kind of beat you, yeah. Well, it'll be an interesting. Let's hope it's a good game at the very least, and not a blowout again, 7-1. Nah.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's a decent game.
Yeah. Who do you want?
I'm actually going with Germany, only because if I don't, certain friends of mine will come and beat me up. Probably. That's about my only connection to the German team. Yeah. I'm waiting for hand egg.
That's probably as good as any.
I'm waiting for hand egg season.
That sounds good.
All right, Marcel, take care of yourself, man.
All right, thanks, and let me know when it goes up.
Will do. All right, okay. Man. Take care.
Cool.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.